You are listening to local and regional news produced by KMUN with help from our news partners. I'm Skylar Butenchin. It's Thursday, September 11th. Last week, Republican State Representative Cyrus Javidi abruptly announced he was now a Democrat. The decision followed on the heels of a decisive vote he cast in favor of a major transportation bill, the only Republican to do so. But the party switch leaves local Democrats with big questions, while some Republicans are saying good riddance. Katie Frankowitz reports.
Jeff Denny, chair of the Clatsop County Democratic Party Central Committee, says Javidi's switch to the Democratic Party was a complete surprise. But
considering a lot of what he has put out on his blog over the last few months, and a lot of some of the votes that he has taken and issues that he supported, there were times that we wondered, why isn't he on our side?
In a statement, Javidi, a lifelong Republican, said his values and priorities haven't changed. His party has. Denny says that with the rise of MAGA, he's not surprised that some moderate Republicans might feel out of place among their own. He says he welcomes Javidi. Still, given the lawmaker's past record on issues like abortion rights, Denny says Democrats will have a lot of questions. For Mike Hanratty, chair of the Tillamook County Republican Party Central Committee, Javidi's switch was less surprising. He had heard rumors ahead of the decision, and besides, in his opinion, Javidi was already voting like a Democrat this year. The transportation vote was the last straw. Hanratty felt like Javidi's defection there went against what many in the lawmakers' District 32 had asked for.
I don't believe he'd get elected as a Democrat, Republican, Independent, or anything else if anybody else runs against him.
Hanratty expects to have several Republican candidates step up to run against Javidi in the May primary.
The Nehalem Bay Health District's new clinic facility in Wheeler is scheduled for a grand opening next month on Saturday, October 4th. Health District Board President Mark Johnson says work on the $12.2 million health center and pharmacy is on track to come in under budget. The new 16,000-square-foot building in Wheeler will expand Nehalem Bay Health District's exam room capacity from 7 to 15. And the second floor of the building will house a dental clinic, two behavioral health counselors, and a community room. Funding for the project is coming primarily from a roughly $10 million bond approved by voters in May of 2023. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com. A state plan to set aside 77,000 acres of mature forests on DNR lands is facing opposition on multiple fronts. KNKX environment reporter Bellamy Palethorpe has the story.
Small mills and loggers, county beneficiaries, and even some environmental activists opposed to the plan dominated public comments at the most recent meeting of the State Board of Natural Resources. Some said it doesn't do enough to protect the next generation of old-growth forests, but most said it goes too far, too fast. Heath Heikela with the American Forest Resource Council said the moratorium that Dave Upthegrove implemented on his first day as public lands commissioner already set the state's law industry back.
We fell nearly 200 million board feet short of last year's timber program. That is a very drastic impact.
He called on the board to apply its standards for sustainable harvest levels to Upthegrove's goals.
And if anything we could agree on here in the state of Washington is that we practice sustainable forestry.
The agency says its next step is to get the authority from the state legislature to enter into carbon markets and find other ways to make money from conservation. I'm Bellamy Palethorpe reporting.
Washington State Governor Bob Ferguson signed an executive order on Tuesday to require project labor agreements for workers on public works projects. NWPB's Renee Diaz has more.
The executive order will require large public works projects that have over $35 million of construction costs to have project labor agreements. or PLAs for their workers. PLAs are negotiated agreements between a contractor and labor organizations that establish terms of employment for a project. Here's Governor Ferguson.
Trades really fuel our economy and build our infrastructure as a state. We think it's important for, worker protections, labor harmony, and making sure projects get completed on time.
The governor says he hopes this order will lead to improving worker safety on large state projects. I'm Renee Diaz reporting.
Tuberculosis cases in Spokane County have nearly doubled in the past 5 years. The regional health district has already seen nearly as many TB cases this year as it did all of last year. Spokane Public Radio's Eliza Billingham has more.
Tuberculosis is a highly contagious bacterial infection that attacks the lungs. 100 years ago, it was the leading cause of death in the U.S. It's now widely considered under control in the U.S., though the CDC estimates 13 million Americans live with inactive TB. Globally, active TB is still a major issue. The American Lung Association says it's the 13th leading cause of death worldwide. Spokane County has 11 active cases of TB so far this year. Last year, it had 12 total. In 2020, it only had 5. The health district head says this isn't just a single spike.
Dr. Velasquez has shared that this does not appear to be a one-time uptick, but more the new standard.
That was Spokane Regional Health District's financial director, Kim Kramars. She asked the Board of County Commissioners this week for funds to pay for a new TB nurse. She couldn't explain why cases are going up, but she did explain that it's the health district that oversees TB cases. Patients typically require 6 to 12 months of daily in-home monitoring, which hospitals or clinics can't provide. But with its tight budget constraints, it seems unlikely Spokane County would find the funds to create a new position. I'm Eliza Billingham, reporting.
Heading into the fall, public health officials are preparing for the usual season of respiratory illnesses. Jefferson Public Radio's Jane Vaughn reports that includes COVID-19, RSV, and the flu.
The symptoms of these illnesses are similar because they might all include fever, cough, and shortness of breath. But other symptoms, like aches or difficulty breathing, might indicate the flu or COVID. Dr. Bob Dannenhofer is the public health officer for Douglas County. He says he's seeing lots of kids sick with COVID right now.
In the second week of school, which we're in now, there's plenty of time to go ahead and share, and people share their germs. So we do see a spike in illness in mid-September.
Dannenhofer says he doesn't think this year will be particularly severe in terms of respiratory illnesses, but he says now is a great time to prepare by getting vaccinated. He also recommends staying home if you're sick, wearing a mask while you're recovering, and washing your hands thoroughly. I'm Jane Vaughn reporting.
I'm Katie Frankowitz. You're listening to KMUN. We're in the middle of KMUN's fall pledge drive. Things are humming along. Thank you so much to everyone who has already donated. Donations make up the bulk of our funding and are even more important as we go into the next year. We recently lost a major chunk of federal funding. I'm sure you've heard about it. This was money that was already committed to us, but in a recent rescission bill passed this summer, the Trump administration clawed that money back, and we are unlikely to get it again anytime soon. This didn't really come as a surprise. All this year, we've been anticipating threats to funding for community and public radio. Obviously, we were hoping they wouldn't touch money that was already promised, but they did, and here we are. So this loss of funding does mean we've had to make some hard decisions here at KMUN. One of the big ones is we've decided to cut our NPR programming. KMUN has been an NPR affiliate station pretty much since the beginning, more than 40 years ago. NPR provides us with excellent programs, programs that I'm sure you are very fond of. You also hear NPR stories during the morning and evening news hours, and that's going away. It's going to be a big shift. I am not excited to lose NPR. I really wish that wasn't the cut we had to make, but making lemonade out of these lemons, I am excited that it opens us up to having a different kind of personal, community-based news program. We're going to have a 29-minute chunk of time that is completely within our control. We won't be cutting in and out of a national news program from start to finish. It will be local and regional news produced by us and reported by us in many cases. we really want to know what you think about this going forward. So if you have questions, if you have concerns, if you have any kind of feedback whatsoever, feel free to send us an email, feedback@kmun.org, or contact me directly. That email address is Katie, K-A-T-I-E, @kmun.org. Thank you so much for your ongoing support, for this station, for all of us who are involved with it. You're listening to KMUN.
You are listening to news from KMUN. To hear us on the air and catch national news from NPR, tune in to 91.9 FM. Morning news begins at 7:59 every weekday. And of course, you will always be able to find today's local and regional news here at kmun.org. To contact the KMUN News Department, email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, @kmun.org.